Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
How you doing?
Jared Payton.
I always feel smarter when I get off the phone with you guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Former NFL running back.
And Payton will hit Pater. Touchdown, Titans.
College football national champion.
Well, Miami has erased all doubts about the national champion.
Son of Walter Payton.
Great win! Great team win.
JK was incredible. They ran early in the second half. A no gain or a, you know, 1 yard loss and you know, spun out of it. Walter Payton style.
Sports anchor for WGN.
I'm on the West Coast. I'm finishing off Legends of the Big Game. I get the chance to sit down today with Fred Biletnikoff, 81 years old.
Wow.
Ken Stabler's touchdowns to Dave Casper and Fred Biletnikoff, number 25. Helped earn 440 yards against the steel curtain.
Might want to wipe your hands. He might have stickum on his hands after you shake hands with him.
Someone asked me, you know, once the players get to stickum all over their hands, and, you know, I mean, it is so powerful, how do they go to the bathroom? That was a good question.
The Jared Payton Show today.
Jared Payton with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
We love chopping it up with Jared Payton.
Oh.
See, because he's always in, and he's a guest that actually listens to the show, which makes things even better when we bring him on to the airwaves. Check him out on Channel 9. He does an awesome job there, and he's just our friend, our football friend, Jared Payton. JP, how you doing?
Doing great, fellas. You hear me? I'm in the car on 90 right now looking at this gloomy day that the Bears have brought in us with this snow. So trying to maneuver my way to WGN at the moment. Hi, Panny is a man, dude. He always finds a way to be able to bring back my conversations from other shows and talking about Fred Biletnikoff. Awesome intro, man. Thank you, Danny.
Yeah, man, that was lovely to think of those Raiders teams and to hear the voice of John Facenda, the voice of God himself. What was it with you and the old Raiders? Man, you're not an old enough man to remember and love those teams, Jarrett.
No, you know, it's Legends of the Big Game is, I think, year six, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm going around talking to all these guys that played in the Super Bowl and talking about their lives of what that experience was like, but then also what they're doing now. And over the last few years, it's just some of the guys that have sat down with me. I mean, I've a bunch of gold jacket guys who open up their homes or just give me their time. That is what I'm very grateful for. And so last year, at the last Super Bowl in Vegas, you know, we were talking with the Alumni Association from the Raiders and trying to get guys to come on to certain shows that I do at the Super Bowl. And as I started to look up Fred's, just his life story, it was of his daughter being killed and what they're doing to carry on her legacy with these homes for young women. It was phenomenal. And so I gave his wife a call and she was like, yeah, Fred and I would love to do it. So they were in Vegas and flew out to California, were in the homes that they own for these young girls that to help them, you know, get through life, that are going through substance abuse issues and all this other stuff. And it was just very, very deep. And never met him before. But to see his face when I walked in the door to see him, he looked at me and it was just like, this dude's a legend. And he loved my dad and loved everything about my dad. So just sitting down having conversation with these guys and it's pretty phenomenal. I'll never take it for granted, you guys.
I think it's really wonderful. Like I remember talking to some people over there when you were first like saying, hey, this is something that we should do. It is such a great piece of television that you put together, JP. These people that you talk to, the way you get them to open up, it's so fun. And I always joke with people. I'm like, y'all realize the man played in the league. Like I know people see Jared and they're like, oh, you know, there's Walterson. No.
There's levels to the conversation.
There's 100% levels to the conversation.
Yeah, it Lawrence, I appreciate that. It's crazy. This past Super Bowl is when I really saw, because Nextstar owned the channel that the Super Bowl was on in that city. So, and throughout the hotel, that's like the first channel that came on to in all the hotel that we were staying in. And so it was like the second day. It was after NFL Honors the next day, and Roger Goodell walks up to me and he's like, bro. And I'm like, did I do something? I thought he was mad at me. I'm like, Roz, what's up, man? He's like, dude, you are on every time I turn on the TV in my hotel room, you're on my TV. And I'm like, because I do Legends of the Big Game, Big Game Tailgate, which airs throughout the week at Super Bowl that week. And then also Big Game Bound. So I do all these shows that kind of culminate for Super Bowl. And I'm on TV in the Super Bowl city. And so to have Roger Goodell, like, you know, he takes his Peloton with him everywhere, I think. He travels around with it, and he's, like, riding on his Peloton watching me on TV. I'm like, this is kind of crazy. But, yeah, I mean, just the Steve Young interview this year,
yes,
of him sitting down talking to me is going to be phenomenal. And Drew Brees sat down with him earlier on. So it's – and I think the Steve Young interview actually came off of Dan Pompey's article that I read that he did about – coaching his daughters. And so when I called Dan, I'm like, Dan, I got to do the video version of this. And he was like, yo, I'll get you in contact. And like you said, he's got everybody's number in his phone. He does. He kind of laid the groundwork. So I'm very grateful to Dan Pompey as well.
We're with Jared Payton here on Spiegel and Holmes. So you also heard Jim Harbaugh there in the open, and he was referencing his old teammate, Walter Payton. So look, Jarrett, we all have theories and I've spouted off a few. We all have some sources, and they might lead to those theories, but as far as you know, what was the reason that they didn't even bother to want to talk to Jim Harbaugh this past offseason, as far as you know?
As far as I know, it kind of comes back, I think, you guys, to just some of those reports coming out about the way that the power structure is. I mean, to me, that's the only thing that makes sense. I haven't heard from any of the sources that they didn't want, like, I don't know. That there was something wrong of who wrote that article not too long ago, just about,
I think it was Mike Sando about
Mike Sando. Kind of like Sando's article, right? Where it was just talking about that power structure. That's kind of what I heard, but not from any great source, but it kind of makes sense. And so he listening to you guys talk about Thomas Brown, and especially you speaks of how excited you are about him being the next Bears head coach. I got to figure out how to get in on this dinner with Lawrence and Shane. So I'm going to figure out how to weasel my way in here.
You're invited no matter what. Whoever wins that bet, you're invited no matter what.
To your point, though, Jared, just to put it back in people's heads, this is what Mike Sando wrote. Executives around the league think that a Bears structure featuring an empowered, engaged team president in Kevin Warren all but rules out the possibility that Chicago would seek established power coaches, even though such candidates would likely handle a market as tough as Chicago more comfortably than Eberflus has or the next hot coordinator might. That's a heavy paragraph right there, that power coaches don't stand a chance in this market. That's scary to hear.
Yeah, but the other direction, the way that this organization has gone hasn't worked, speaks. So to me, you got to change. We're running on this treadmill here in Chicago as Bears fans. And I just, we got to find a way to get off, maybe get on the elliptical, do something else, do some stretch, like change it up a little bit, because what we've seen has not worked. And what jumped out to me, and I was listening to you guys earlier about listening to Thomas Brown talk and the way that he talks, the way that he coaches, the way that it's like, it's not about me. It's about how do I put my players in the best situations to be successful? If you go back to the other head coaches that came before Matt Eberflus, and guys, I've had Mark Trestman had some time with him in Montreal when I was with the Alouettes, to watching Matt Nagy and the way that he was, and just understanding the reasons, the situations, and that I saw Shane Waldron kind of go through his short period of time here in Chicago. All these coaches, coordinators, they want to be the smartest guys in the room. It's my way or the highway. It's my system works and we're going to make it work. You've got to fit in to this. And we saw that. We've seen that with all of these coaches. Hence the reason why they're not head coaches anymore. They're not head coaches anymore because they don't know how to adapt to their players. And that was one of my biggest issues with Matt Nagy when it came to Justin Fields and trying to figure out how do you do what's best for him. And we saw that there was times where he was pressured into that, where it's a guy like Thomas Brown, it is so refreshing to hear him say, it's not about me. It's about putting my players and do what they do best. And I can hear that in guys like DJ Moore and the way that they're talking now after Shane Waldron's been gone. And it's just refreshing to hear that. Even Richard Hightower, like, it's not about me, but guess what? I'm going to take responsibility for this. And we got to get better and move forward. I'm in the same boat as you guys. I guess, a little bit. Things could change how this season ends. And I think that Matt Eberflus is feeling a lot of pressure right now from all sides and trying to figure this thing out of, like, how do I get this thing back on track? I mean, last year it was getting that defense back on track and finishing strong with that defense that I think's kind of saved his job. But I believe in my heart that for Ryan Poles, you don't get an opportunity to be a GM that often. These jobs don't come around that often. And so it's almost the same way last year I was thinking people were, you know, that we were all talking about keeping Justin, or what do you do with the number one overall pick and you keep Justin? So many people came up to me and said, keep Justin. In my head, I was like, if Justin doesn't work out, yo, it ain't going to be good for Ryan Poles. Like, he can't hitch his wagon to Justin Fields. You go and draft Caleb Williams or one that extends time for you. These GMs, coach, everybody's trying to extend time for themselves to keep their jobs. So if this thing goes south, I don't think you hiring another head coach is the best way to be able to prolong this opportunity for Ryan Poles. I don't think he can hitch his wagon to Matt Eberflus.
What interests you in this matchup between the Bears and the Vikings?
It's about Caleb. It's how these Flores defenses are so crazy and how much they blitz to find the pressure that they bring, especially the young quarterbacks. It's like, can they find ways to get this quick game going? And I heard you guys yesterday. So I talking about, I think Lawrence was talking about how Caleb has to maybe use his legs to, Biggs was like, nope, he's going to have to throw the ball down the field. I was like, yeah. I love how you guys fight. I think it's going to be a mixture of both. It's finding ways to stay inside that pocket for Caleb and to get the ball out. And not only on these wide receiver screens, can we see some slants, like some real quick, these quick throws, and let him get the ball out of his hands quicker, but also trying to find a way to establish the run game with these running backs. And I think it's just interesting to see this past week of Roshan just getting a little bit more tick and a little bit more burn. I'm going to be interested to see how much more burn he gets this week and this Sunday because of Thomas Brown being a former running back and probably liking the way that Roshan's style is, even though we know Swift is amazing when you get him in space. At some point, with the weather getting the way that it's going, you're going to have to be able to grind this thing out on the ground. You're going to have to. And I think Roshan gives you the best opportunity to be able to do that with this offense.
I love watching Roshan run between the tackles. He seems to have that that sense to try and lean and push and then spin and like get whatever he can. Like, what tell us about his style and what you see as a former running back when Roshan's got the ball.
But man, low, he's this compact, man. He's like a he's like a geo tracker, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's just compact. He is compact.
But he's big. Like, he's tall,
he's
though.
He's big. But he's got the, like, the thighs, like, everything about him. He's low center of gravity, the way that he runs. I just love his toughness. And he's from watching him in college to where he is now, guys. He always runs, and he's trying to finish off runs. He's trying to get that extra yard. And especially, we see it a lot, and he runs a lot of ISO. So anytime that you're down there on the goal line, and you have to try to find a way to get a yard, and there's a lot of stuff going on in there down by the goal line of trying to decipher where you need to go, where do you stick your head, who's blocking for you, all that stuff. But he finds a way to be able to get his nose over the goal line and stretch that ball over. I love the way that he's competed, and I just want to see him get more burn. And that's hard when, you know, the guy that above you is getting paid a lot more and he's supposed to be the feature back. They got to find a way. There's only one football, and it's so tough.
Who in that Miami running backs room, the legendary Miami running backs room that you were in with all those guys, who was the most like DeAndre in terms of breaking stuff outside when it didn't necessarily need to be broken outside? But they're like, oh, I got the speed, and I'm going to take it out there, when the coaches are like, would you just stay inside and get 4 yards, please?
Hey, Willis McGahee. I mean, Willis was – I can't say this without smiling. So if you're watching Twitch and you see me, what Willis did in 2002 – it was like watching a video game live in person, where he would go to one side of the field, come back to the other side of the field, and maybe come back again to the other side, and then find a way to get like 20 yards. Like, it was the most unbelievable thing that I got a chance to see from a running back with my own eyes. And he was a monster that year. So yeah, he would always do that. Bortis was very technical where he needed to go. Frank, the best pure runner out of everybody.
Frank Gore.
He was just
unbelievable.
Yeah, Frank Gore. He was just, and everybody was afraid of Frank. Like, everybody was like trying to get their burn, get to the league, because they knew Frank was coming. And lo and behold, my last year there, I'm like, dang, like, I'm the one here now with Frank, and I ain't gonna get no burn. But when it comes down to it, he hurts his knee, and I get a chance to get burn, and I learned something from each one of those guys and how they approach the game, and not just how they approach the game of football, but also the game of life. And very grateful for all those guys that I was in that room.
You brought up ISO. Let's talk about duo. Last week, the Packers used duo very well for their run game. And I'm sitting there thinking, this would make a lot of sense for Aaron Jones and the Vikings to run some duo.
Talk. What is duo? Give us a little whiteboard on that.
Well, you guys talking about are you talking about like a two back set, just a fullback and a
the dual blocks where they're double teaming at the line of scrimmage and it opened up.
Oh, you're talking. Okay. Well, yes, that I'm telling you right now. To me, that's where things open up in ISO, right? When you got two guys coming off to one guy, whether they're coming off and then getting off to the second level. And for a running back, for me, it's just easy when you're coming downhill to see a little bit of daylight before you get to that second level. So everybody is working in tandem to be able to come up to get to the second level to those linebackers to free the running back up to be able to do what you do. And everybody's trying to get to the second level, and yeah, if it's working, yes, it's definitely working. I personally, man, give me a fullback too, and in the I formation, and then let me go, or you know, have the fullback in there in that formation, in the I formation, and if you're coming off with those combo blocks, to me, it just opens up so much more. And if they're seeing success in it, then they're definitely the Vikings are going to definitely see success in it as well.
Yeah, it's scary, some of the things. Well, what do you think of Darnold?
What?
Oh, how Darnold's played this year. Because, I mean, his numbers are great, but I understand anyone who doesn't truly believe it. You know what I mean?
I don't. No. I think he's Sam Darnold's having he's having success because of definitely what the guys that he has around him, but also you're playing with a defense that gives you a lot of faith as well. I think you sometimes you get put in a situation, Lawrence, where this is you've been around so many different stops that you know you've learned so much that you get to this point in your career and you're able to play free. And I think he's playing free. Hence the reason why this team, that team has the record that they have right now. Finding ways not to turn over the ball. And if you're a veteran, you can find ways to kind of take care of the football. That can give you success as well. But, I mean, every time you got like a guy like Justin Jefferson, I mean, dude, life is so much easier. And you have other guys around you as well to make life easier. It's almost in some situations where I'll go back to Miami where you have a guy like Ken Dorsey and you have – a bunch of guys that can make plays. Your goal is just to make sure you can get them the football. And if you can pinpoint and get them the football, they can do the rest, especially run after catch. And I think that's what is making him so successful is like, dude, I got nothing to lose. This is my opportunity. I've been to a lot of different places. It's time for me to ball. And how much he's learned and be able to process throughout his career, I think has kind of been for some of his success, and especially the success early on.
Well, Jarrett, we hope that this season – we hoped that it was going to last past Thanksgiving. And I think it is. Like, by the calendar, they're going to continue to play games. But it's been a depressing week, hasn't it? It's like we're all trying to kind of process and figure out what the hell we're going to do with the rest of our football season in terms of relevance.
Yeah, it does. And it hurts. And it hurts for Bears fans. And I think the hardest part is that you're about to beat your arch rival and end a 10-game losing skid to them, and you came up short. And it feels like we're always on this side. It always feels like we're stuck where we are. So everybody at Hallis Hall has got to figure out, from top to bottom, has to figure out, how do we get ourselves out of this position? Because like I said before, I feel like this is who we've been. It's not who we are, but this is who we've been. This is, as fans, as a team, as an organization, we have to be better. Like, have to be better. And everybody's got to own up to that. And whatever it takes to be able to win, then you got to make those decisions accordingly. Because I was saying to Shane and Tanny, like, what would my pops be saying about what's going on right now? Like, if he was here, I would just love to hear his opinion on what's going on. Because like I said, he didn't work as hard as he did to get the organization, to help get this organization to where it is, to be where we are right now.
What do you
not
got?
The blood, sweat. Go ahead.
No. The blood, sweat, and tears,
the blood,
for sure.
The blood, sweat, and tears that he put into this and for the fans and all. This is not who we are. We have to be better. Like, have to be better.
What are you doing on Channel 9 tonight?
Tonight, I have no clue. I've been gone for the last like 3 days. So getting back in the studio, it's going to feel like, hopefully I'll be on training wheels a little bit, but Dan Sports at 10:30, Josh Freiman and myself, probably talking some Bears, getting everybody ready for this weekend, having some conversations there, and then breaking down some of these, probably the Cubs moves and all this other stuff, man. I'm excited. I'm getting back and getting on the interwebs and start clicking around and seeing what everybody says, but I'll be listening to you guys while I'm in the studio, though, I'll tell you that.
Just hit Ben Bradley in the ribs and tell him congratulations on winning his award.
I will. I'll tell him. I talked to him last night, so I'll definitely talk to him today.
Thank you, Jarrett.
See you guys.
All right, man. It's Jarrett Payton. Yeah, there are some Cubs moves. We touched on one of them the other day. There's another small one, and there could be more coming just because of where we are on the calendar. But the White Sox, a little bit in the news as well.
You don't want to talk about Manager of the Year?
Sure, we could talk about Manager of the Year.
In the National League? Because you would think that, you know, you spend a lot of money on...
Where did Craig Counsell finish in that voting? I got to check that voting.
You spend a lot of money on a manager, and you're like, oh, well, you're going to make their organization weaker. And then all of a sudden, some things happen.
Did you see it's the shortest time ever for somebody to go from ex-player to Manager of the Year, Stephen Vogt? Nobody's ever done it that fast. Joe Girardi was the previous fastest.
I didn't think Stephen Vogt had a great postseason, though.
No, he didn't, but he had a good regular season.
He had a great regular season. Mm-hmm. So a little baseball conversation for you.
And categories later in the hour.
Ooh, categories.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Sexy.
Saucy.
We'll do all that next here on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Look at this duo. He's all grown up. Look at you two. I love the mashup between you two, by the way. It's like two great comic books that I used to collect are now a team up.
Afternoons on The Score.
The White Sox. They're one of the key sports franchises in the city.
Are they, though?
Yeah, they're one of the key franchises in the city. You got the Cubs. You got the Bears, the Bulls, the Blackhawks, the Sky,
wow,
the Wolves, the Red Stars. What's the name of the rugby team? The Hounds. Hounds are up there, and the White Sox are right in that mix.
And DePaul Careful, basketball, baby. We back.
Yeah, DePaul back. Hoops, you're 5-0. Dave Corzine getting his number going to the rafters. Good for him.
I'm glad that you mentioned that. Like, Dave, I've had the chance to work with Dave, do a little bit of play-by-play, him doing color when Zach was doing other stuff. And he's just, like, a really wonderful person. Loves DePaul buckets. And Michael Jordan said that he was the best passing big man that he ever played with. That's pretty cool. That's a hell of a compliment.
Yeah, it is a hell of a compliment. Thinking of the other big men, he didn't really play with a lot of great passing big men, now that I think of it. Because Corzine was like an old school Borwinkle top of the key distributor, very capable at that kind of big man ball.
So congratulations for the retirement of Dave Corzine's number. Mm-hmm. Good for him.
Chicago Dogs, that's a fun franchise in the city.
Are.
I like that place. The ketchup and mustard are the mascots.
I've seen it.
Ruben's my profile picture of Ruben on my phone is still him with ketchup. Just the biggest smile that he ever had in his life.
Why not?
Yeah, the Wolves up in Rosemont, always a good time.
Yeah, sure. How about the Cougars in Kane County? That's not Chicago, though.
A lot of Cougars down there, I'll tell you, man.
Too many?
You go to any neighborhood bar.
Tell you what.
They're just hanging.
Now we're back to Ribco.
I'll tell you what.
If you don't stop naming teams.
I'll say it.
I tell you what.
Macadamia.
And the White Sox.
Oh, yeah, one of the key franchises in the city.
That's it?
Well, no. No, there's a lot more. Pat Murphy won Manager of the Year.
Wait, he wasn't Manager of the White Sox?
No. I know. You're going like, what is this? How does this happen? Pat Murphy with a... Let's go to Pat Murphy.
Sox got a new bench coach. He was on the staff with Pat Murphy up in Milwaukee.
Walker McKinven is his name. He's the new bench coach for Will Venable. So Will Venable putting the staff together. I like what I've heard, by the way, so far from Will Venable. Went and grabbed himself a bench coach from Milwaukee, and Pat Murphy, who won Manager of the Year, was talking about losing him.
Yeah, I mean, Walker's magnificent. He's been behind the scenes for a long time, and you remember. Since we put him on the field and put him in the dugout, he's continued to make strides. I mean, he's not that young, but he seems young. He looks young, but he really understands the major league game. He's a ruthless decision maker. He's got a lot of great talents. And I love Will, being around Will for a year. I love him, and I think that combination is going to be lethal. I think the White Sox are moving in the right direction for sure. And it's gonna hurt us. There's no question. Walk only has 9 fingers, so we will be able to get a 10-fingered guy in there. But it'll be a great challenge to replace him.
Wait, that is amazing. That is incredible.
We'll be able to get a 10-fingered guy in there. That's where the Brewers have come up short.
Dude, no, Pat Murphy. I've heard this. Boog actually said that Pat Murphy is 80 grade funny. Like on the scouting scale.
20 to 80 scouting, he's an 80.
That Pat Murphy is 80 grade funny.
It's funny how.
That's the legend of him.
How Craig Counsell leaves, and then you would think that Milwaukee would be damaged beyond repair.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't.
Well, good for
you. They won the division by quite a few games.
Good for your White Sox that they went and grabbed Walker McKinven.
Quite better than the Cubs in every aspect of the game.
You know what McKinven
did? And Murphy ended up winning Manager of the Year.
He did, yeah. You know what Walker McKinven was responsible for up there, among other things? catcher daily game planning.
How about that?
And William Contreras had quite a nice rise as a defensive catcher.
Could use that 4 years ago.
Yeah.
My team.
I do like the quote inside of their ruthless decision maker.
Absolutely.
I like that.
And the combination of him and Venable, because that's how it can work when you got a good bench coach. And, you know, it's weird, man. You're going to take all your shots at the Cubs, and you can and you should. Here I am saying good things about Will Venable and your coaching staff you're putting together.
I don't think it matters. That's honestly speaks. Like, I like everything that I've heard the White Sox have done. I like what I'm hearing about how they've added to the scouting department.
The revamped research and development.
I like the hiring of Will Venable. I like the hiring of his bench coach. None of it matters. I'm sorry that I am a Sox nihilist now, but none of it matters.
Eventually it could. Eventually it could.
Could.
Take a long while.
Notice you didn't say will.
Mm-hmm. Well, how can you?
Exactly.
Now I understand. I understand where you are.
And I'm only taking shots at this. It's not like a White Sox Cubs thing. I'm taking shots because you have the highest paid manager in the game. And it was supposed to help you and hurt them.
And instead, they're still better than you. It's absolutely true.
By a lot.
If Jesse Rogers were on the air, he would ask Walker McKinven, how long have you had 9 fingers out of 10?
Well, see, that could actually be a legitimate question.
So the answer wouldn't be all my life, like Antonio Alfonseca said about his 6-6.
That could be a legitimate question. There could have been some sort of accident in a factory.
Yeah, it's true.
That sort of thing. There is no accident, as we know it, that then gives you extra fingers and toes.
Oh, man. I got to put my hand into a crop. What do they call those things?
Yeah, crop one of those duster. Crop things. Yeah. Yeah. What do they call it? One of those crop
and
things.
And added fingers.
Any event. One more quick one can we get to here? So they also had A.J. Hinch on foul territory yesterday.
I like A.J. Hinch's team went to the playoffs.
Exactly. And it's always one of those things where it's like you feel good about a White Sox thing, and then you're always reminded about something else that happened. So AJ asking the question that we all want to ask AJ Hinch.
Hinch, I thought your best managerial job was that time with the White Sox when you sent out the letter thanking the fans and you autographed the thing at the bottom. That was by far your best managerial job. How you didn't win manager of the year that year, I still haven't figured it out. But, you know, you tried for 5 minutes or so when you sent the letter out. It's fine. But
tell people to Google it if they don't
know. Yeah, if you don't know the story, Google it. White Sox sent out a letter that was signed by it's crazy. Anyway,
I never got paid for that, by the way, either. I never got paid for that, so I don't know if I was an official employee at that time.
Twist the knife even deeper.
AJ Hinch wants to thought he should have gotten paid for that five minutes when he was the manager.
He should have, and he should have been the White. And notice that he did some really creative managing this year that allowed his team to go to the playoffs.
Yeah, he did. That pitching staff in Detroit, man, they had the fewest number of innings by a starting staff in August and September. And that's when they made their push.
Yep.
Incredible.
It really is.
I really wonder what A.J. Hinch would have done with that White Sox core to help push them over the edge instead of Tony La Russa dragging them back down below.
He would have managed them.
Oh, yeah, that's a good thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's why I have these feelings, Speaks.
You
and
do.
It's gonna be,
got a lot of feelings,
it's gonna be. It's going to be very difficult to undo what they have done. And I feel fairly comfortable speaking for a lot of White Sox fans.
I understand. I will still be pointing out the things they do that should give you a sense of the bus taking a good turn.
Please bring all the positive stuff their way. It just doesn't really matter at all, as Lauryn Hill once said.
It's your opinion. That's your opinion.
When we come back,
let's play the game.
Categories is next on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on The Score.
So, I think it's time to play the game.
We're playing the game?
Yes, we're playing the game.
Do we have to play the game?
What's the game?
The game is called Categories. What we do is we pick three categories. The host does, and this week I am the host, Matt Spiegel, here on the Spiegel and Holmes Show. And the other three Jamokes on the show, whoever they may be, have to guess items on the list of the categories. Two of them are sports related. One is not. All of them have been kind of running around the collective brains of the show. You guys ready to go?
No. Yes.
You start naming items, and if you miss one, you are out. Cairo Santos missed a kick. Was blocked, actually. You might have heard about it. But he still ranks fourth all time on the Bears' list of made field goals. Made field goals by kickers in the history of the Chicago Bears. Cairo Santos is fourth all time. I would like the other 23. We start with Chris Tannehill.
Kevin Butler
is number two on the list.
Shane, Robbie Gould.
Number one on the list.
Paul Edinger
is number five on the list. I didn't realize Edinger was that high.
He kicked for a long time.
I guess so. Tanny, good luck.
I know he's got a record now in the NFL, but I don't know how long he did it with the Bears for. Eddie Pinheiro.
Number 13 on the Bears list of all time. He is the most accurate kicker in NFL history. Eddie
Cody
Pinheiro.
Parkey has to be on the
list.
No.
Dump.
No, he has to be.
Hold on. Let me cross him off twice. Doink and doink. Number 12 on the list.
The guy from the Today Show?
Yeah.
It's Cody Parkey.
Good Morning America, right?
Is it me? Is it my turn?
It was the Today Show. I
think he did all the shows.
Shane, did you say Cody Parkey?
Yeah, I said Cody Parkey.
Lawrence, it's you.
Jeff Jaeger.
Jeff Jaeger, number 9 all time and made field goals for the Chicago Bears. Somewhere, the olds are screaming names aloud. The olds.
I hear you out there. I got nothing olds. I'm sorry.
I was
born into the Kevin Butler era, and after that,
there's still one more in our era.
Oh, there's a few.
I'm sure there is.
There's a couple.
Connor Barth.
Tanny is out. Connor Barth is not on the top 24. He might be 20. Oh, no, there he is. He's number 11. My bad. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Connor Barth, number 11 all time and made field goals. Lawrence.
Olindo Mare.
Omare is number 19 all time on the Bears list. Shane.
I'm out after that. Yeah, I'm out.
Nice job, boys. Lawrence, you got another just for fun?
Bob Thomas?
That's the olds loudly screaming. Number 3 all time is Bob Thomas.
Thomas from Matchbox 20?
Yeah,
yes.
No. George Blanda is on this list.
Stupid. Stupid.
Chris Boniol is on this
list. Where are you boning him?
And Mike Nugent is number 23.
Oh, my God.
Carlos Huerta.
That guy just wants to bang on the drum all day.
Huerta. I know. Chris Boniol and Carlos Huerta.
Is that Tanny? Is that Mike Ted Nugent? Is he banging the drum all day?
No, it's Todd Rundgren.
Oh, we did this already. Yeah, we did this already. I've made that mistake before.
I always thought Johnny B made that song up. I always thought that song was Johnny B.
Johnny B makes nothing up. That man's the GOAT.
All right, the MVP awards are going to be given out tonight. It's widely expected that one of them might be unanimous. And I have the list in front of me of all the unanimous MVP award winners. Too hard. I'm not going to give you that one. It's too tough. What I did instead was I looked back to 2010. This is every Chicago baseball player on the Cubs or the Sox that got a single vote at any time.
Oh, wow. Since, I love this category.
Since 2010, any Chicago player who received a vote of any kind in the MVP voting. Shane, you are first.
Jose Abreu.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different years he received votes, including 2020 when he won. Lawrence.
Frank Thomas. Wait, no, it's
2010.
Sorry, 2010. Moncada.
Yoan Moncada. He was 21st in 2019. Chris Tannehill.
Chris Bryant.
Ooh. He won the award in 2016 and two other times received votes. Yes. Chicago MVP vote getters since 2010.
Dylan Cease,
22nd place in 2022. Yes. Lawrence.
Javier Baez
finished second in 2018. Absolutely.
Oh, man, 2016 Cubs. Did Ben Zobrist get a vote that year?
He did not.
Oh, he
Ben Zobrist
he did everything.
Did not get a vote in 2016.
Cody Bellinger,
10th place in 2023.
Ago.
Absolutely.
Jake Arrieta,
6th place in 2015. These are Chicago baseball MVP vote getters since 2010.
Carlos Rodon.
Carlos Rodon is a no.
Ooh.
Did not get an MVP Damn. Vote.
I thought he did. Damn.
Yeah, I thought he did.
I don't have him.
Oh, no, no. You're.
Everyone want to look him up.
Hopefully I thought it was a good guess by Sheen.
Hopefully I didn't miss it. I don't think that I did as an MVP.
Yeah, no. No, he didn't. You're right.
He didn't.
You're right. Just looked.
Okay. Lawrence, you got another one?
Anthony Rizzo.
Anthony Rizzo. Absolutely. 2018, 2017, 16, 15, and 14.
What about any future MVP MVPs like Addison Russell?
2016, he finished 19th in MVP
voting. What a good guy. Yeah. What a Tanny's top, on Tanny's Mount Rushmore of good guys.
Just for fun, if you want to throw out any others. Kyle Hendricks got votes in 2016.
Did Paul Konerko get one in
Paul
there?
Paul Konerko, 2011 and 2010.
Oh,
wow.
Kyle Schwarber.
Kyle Schwarber did not. Did not.
I'm out.
Alex Rios in 2012.
I was going to name him.
He Wait, finished 15th.
Babe Ruth didn't get
no.
any?
Adam Eaton finished 19th in 2016.
Also on the good guys, Mount Rushmore.
My
Chris
God.
Sale twice. Dansby.
Yeah, I need my wife to come with me everywhere we go.
Uh-huh.
Adam Eaton, you dweeb.
Dansby Swanson got votes in 2023. Yu Darvish, Ian Happ. Ryan Tapera got a vote. Remember that?
Oh, wow.
It was
that's
a gag.
Right.
It was like some writer did it as a gag.
Probably Paul Sullivan.
And then Alfonso Soriano in 2012 and Starlin Castro in 2011. Those would have been acceptable, too. But onward we move. And we go now to the state of Wisconsin. Because the state of Wisconsin is everywhere. Pat Murphy's your manager of the year. The Bucks just beat the Bulls and, of course, the Packers. I am holding in my hot little hands the 10 most produced kinds of cheese in the state of Wisconsin. These are the 10 varieties of cheese that are produced the most in the state of Wisconsin. Lawrence, you're first.
Cheddar.
Number two on the list is cheddar. Tanny.
It's funny. I was just at Woodman's the other day in the cheese aisle. They got the big score sign there at Woodman's. How about cheddar?
That was already guessed.
Lawrence
oh,
just said that.
Oh, I was thinking about how I was going to talk about Woodman's. let's go mozzarella.
That's amazing. Mozzarella, yes, indeed. Number one is
Swiss.
Swiss is number eight on the list of most produced cheeses.
Munster?
Munster is number seven on the list. And a delicious cheese, I must
hey,
say.
Hey, no editorializing.
yeah, it's 54.
Gouda?
That's Gouda. That's no Gouda. Number 10 on the list.
American.
American is number four. American cheese. There's some ridiculous categories here, I gotta admit. Lawrence, you got it. Lawrence, if you don't stop naming cheeses.
You don't start naming cheeses.
Start name. You got to start.
Oaxacan.
Well, let me see. No, no.
In Wisconsin, though, right?
Yeah.
Colby Jack.
Colby Jack is not on the list.
What?
Shane, give me a cheese.
Feta.
Is number five on the list.
Wow.
Number three is other Italian cheeses.
That would have been
hey,
hate
yo.
Them.
Hey,
hate
yo.
Them.
That sounds
Keep
really racist.
Christopher Columbus.
Oh, we're just getting started. That would be Parmesan or Romano or Asiago. Number six, Hispanic cheeses. Is that Oaxacan?
Wait, so
what?
It doesn't say. It says queso fresco, queso blanco.
Come on.
What three do they include in Italian?
Romano, Asiago, and Parmesan.
I'm 99% sure Asiago's not an Italian cheese.
Well.
God, that's boring.
All right, Lawrence, you want back in? Is that a Hispanic cheese?
No, it's fine.
Okay, I'm
Shane
sorry.
And Lawrence can have a cheese off.
Add it to the bet. And Gorgonzola was the other one. Number
That's
nine.
That's not a real cheese.
I hate Gorgonzola.
It's not
so
a real cheese.
I. Hate Gorgonzola, hate blue.
I hate when they're like, wrong. Oh, let's put some Gorgonzola on your steak. Get that out of here.
Get that out of here. Totally agree. All right, so Shane won one category. Lawrence, you win two? Is that what happened?
I did.
Yeah, winner of the game is Lawrence Holmes.
Asiago is Italian, my bad.
There you go.
All right, Venito.
Bing, bang, boom. That's categories. Next time we play, Lawrence is going to host.
I'm going to try.
Do it. Got it.
When we come back, we've got a Bears hit. Two words,
still
Mark Grody.
Still two words, still two
it's
words.
It's still two words. We'll see how it is next week, though. It could be one word. That's for sure. Grody joins us next on The Score.